Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Hi, this is Debbie Dashinger, and today on the podcast, I am speaking with George Haas, the founder and premier investigator of the Cydonia Institute Mars Research Group. We're going to be talking about the great architects of Mars and going through a little bit of investigation of mysterious geometric structures on the surface of Mars, plus some ancient Earth cultures you may not be aware of that have a connection also with Mars and possibly with the Martians. The Dare to Dream podcast show won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast. Welp Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to, and it is high ranking on Apple Podcasts. I ask you right here at the beginning, if you watch this show, if you like this show, pay some homage, please, for this service that you get for free. It'll be 18 years this June. Like the show, subscribe to the show, and comment. I read them all. Really helps the show and helps others find this show. Thank you in advance. Would you like to know your galactic ancestry? Well, you can unlock your cosmic potential with a free starseed video and report. This is an opportunity for you to explore various types of starseeds and uncover your galactic origins. So don't miss this chance to connect with your star lineage. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. That's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Little announcement here, there's an upcoming event. I will be facilitating an online despacho ceremony on April 9th. I'm a certified shamanic energy practitioner and healer, a Moon Aiki rites practitioner. If you don't know about despacho in the Quechua language means to dispatch, and it is the most powerful way to shift your life, to release what no longer serves you, which, by the way, is exactly what this year, this 9-year year of the snake, is all about, releasing. This ceremony will absolutely facilitate and serve you in that way. And instead of what no longer serves you, then you get to create big miracles and new realities. You need to register for the Zoom link and the details. It's only $44 for the entire workshop and ceremony online. Go to debbied.net/despacho. That's debbied.net/despacho. And by the way, all the links for myself and my guest will be in the show description or show notes. My guest today, George J. Haas, is the founder and premier investigator of the Mars Research Group known as the Cydonia Institute. He's a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research. He has co-authored 2 books with a bunch more in the works, which we can anticipate, and 6 peer-reviewed science papers related to anomalous formations on the surface of Mars. George has appeared on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie and on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, The Proof is Out There, plus The Unexplained with William Shatner. If you would like to learn more about him, go to thecydoniainstitute.com. And this is his book that we're going to, amazing photos in here, by the way, folks, highly recommended. This is the book we're going to base this interview on. And with that, I welcome George Haas to Dare to Dream. It's wonderful to have you here. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on your program, Debbie.
I'm excited about this conversation. There's so much to go through, but I want to hit some of the high points. One of the things that I found very arresting in your book, George, is that your research suggests this compelling similarity between the anomalous, and I'll just show the cover of your book because this has some amazing photos right here, the anomalous structures on Mars and the ancient geoglyphs near Mayan cities. Also, Nazca in Peru and other earth sites. So, do you believe that these large designs and patterns made on the ground using stones and earth or by removing ground cover is actually evidence of an ancient interplanetary connection? And if so, what do you believe that connection is?
Well, Debbie, I've been doing this for about 30 years, studying NASA photographs, also the European Space Agency. They provide images of Mars. And with my original co-author, William Saunders, with our first two books, we found a direct correlation between the structures that we're finding on Mars with the cultures of Mesoamerica, including the Maya, the Olmec. The Olmec were the mother culture. That's where all of the other cultures got all of their mythology and everything from. American Indians, all this New World cultures. We're finding all the artwork and the iconography that we're finding etched in these structures on Mars are directly connected to this mythology of Mesoamerican cultures.
Okay, so your work draws these fascinating connections between the Martian structures and the Earth ancient myths, and particularly Mayan and Sumerian stories. What ways do these myths support the, I'll call it hypothesis, but I think you and I know better, of an ancient Martian civilization?
Well, this connection started with the famous Face on Mars, which NASA took with the back in 1976. United States was celebrating its bicentennial. I was in high school at the time, and on television we had bicentennial minutes. The whole country was celebrating the whole 200 years. NASA had also sent up two orbiters, the Viking 1 and the Viking 2, again, the duality with the 200 years. And they went to Mars and started taking pictures. And that summer, NASA released an image that they called, it looked like a head, which later became the face on Mars. And they had a press conference. Jerry Sofen, who was the director, he was part of the release of this information. And it got a lot of attention. And then a week later, they said, oh, we took another picture of that. And it was a trick of light and shadow. There was nothing there. And NASA hoped everybody forgot about it. And that was my first introduction into this whole idea of civilizations or structures on Mars. And when NASA had taken better pictures of this face, what we found was that the face on Mars really didn't look like Frank Sinatra or Elvis Presley. It wasn't symmetrical, it was a bifurcated, two-faced structure, very much like you find in the New World cultures, like the Maya, the Olmec, the Aztec. They do a lot of these two-faced human feline or life and death masks that you see. A lot of museums have these. A very interesting idea, and it's all composite art. The Western ideal, like the Romans and the Greeks, everything was highly symmetrical, and that was their classic beauty. Over in America, the old world here with the Maya, Aztec, and South America, Mexico, they had a whole different idea of art and representing the body. Everything was composite. They had a human animal fusions. They would do these ritual masks that had a human on one side, a feline on the other, or a human on one side, a dog on the other. This whole idea of transformation, the human transformation. So this was, and we're finding the same idea on Mars.
Okay, very interesting about the human transformation and all the figures that they're found. So you mentioned the Olmec. I find this fascinating because I got a lot out of your book on this because I wasn't aware, the others I was, that they were a first major civilization in Mesoamerica. And that civilization includes parts of Mexico and Central America. So around 1600 BCE. And they are famous for these really large stone heads, also from rubber. They're named after rubber.
Yeah,
So,
the local natives, they refer to the Olmec culture as they were the rubber people. They developed, they would make shoes out of rubber. They had the rubber trees. So that's where, all of these tires that we make here, that's where they used to get all the rubber from the rubber tree in Mexico. But the Maya, and they made their ball out of rubber that they played the Maya ball game, which was actually started with the Olmec. The Olmec are considered the mother culture. And there was a lot of argument amongst archaeologists. There was the Olmec camp that think they thought everything came from the Olmec. The Maya said, oh, no, the Maya were a separate culture. It's a lot of this infighting. And you have this with even discussing, you know, the Persians and the Arabic cultures. There's all this infighting about what is the real story. Because, you know, victors tell this history. Now, this was all debated until the, I think, the mid-1980s. When they discovered a few temples down in Mesoamerica that actually depicted these Olmec gods with the Maya. So the Maya took, and this was basically the proof, that the Maya took all of their history, all of their mythology from the Olmec. And we're finding in some of this mythology that there's the Maya Star War. Sounds like the, you know, Darth Vader and the Death Star and all, but this is a what archaeologists call this. This is not George Hobbs making this stuff up. This is I got the receipts in the book. This is all archaeologists talk about the Maya Star War, which I didn't know about until about the early 2000s when I went to I lived in New Jersey, just a little history here. And also, I'm not a scientist. I'm an artist, a painter, a sculptor. That was my vocation. I went to school to be an artist. I exhibited up in New York. And so, you know, having an artistic eye, I know artwork when I see it. And there's a lot of artwork on Mars. And living in New Jersey, I had access to go to the University of Pennsylvania. They had Maya workshops on weekends. Wow. Run by some scholars at times and things like that. So I would go over there and learn how to write and read Maya hieroglyphics. And over time, they started having Maya weekends once a year, which was a 3-day event. And they'd invite all the new archaeologists that were discovering things about the Maya and the Aztec. And they'd have a convention. And I went to those religiously every year. And one year I met this new researcher named Simon Martin. Simon Martin was British. He was a painter and an artist, and he worked for commercial companies. And he also was very interested in the Maya. And he really broke a lot of the Maya code with his decipherments. And he had a book that came out called About the Maya Kings, the History. And in that book, he was also giving lectures over at the university. He talked about this little known place in Mexico called Naranjo. Have you ever heard of Naranjo?
No, but it sounds like the word orange. Is it?
It means orange. It means orange, exactly. And of course, you know, Mars is orange. It's a rusty color. So Naranjo, their patron god, was the Mars Beast in their mythology. Now, the Mars Beast is featured in the Dresden Codex. The Dresden Codex, which is the Maya hieroglyphic book of their, it's basically stargazing, looking at the planets. It also is very detailed about the movements of Mars. And in there, they feature the Mars Beast, or the Zip Monster, he's also called. And that was the patron god of this little place called Naranjo. Now, in the Naranjo recordings, in their writings, in their tablets, and their stela, and in their artwork, they talk about this Maya Star War, which took place between Tikal, Naranjo, Das Polis, Copan, with Mars. It's remarkable. And archaeologists are aware of this. The Maya called Mars, it was equated with the Mars Beast, and it also was called Six Earth Place, which is kind of odd. But if you realize that
it's about the planet, the order of the planets.
Exactly. Just as Zachariah Sitchin talks about the Anunnaki with this connection between Mars and Earth with the Middle East, and if you follow Zachariah Sitchin, you have Ningasada, who took what the Sumerians called the black-headed people, took them down to South America. That's where the Olmec came from, according to Sitchin. So this whole Sumerian Maya connection is also mentioned in the Sumerian text with Zachariah Sitchin's books that he has. And what this story talks about is that Naranjo had wars with the planet Mars, which they called Six Earth Place, which again is the positioning of the planets. The Sumerians, they numbered the planets for when the Anunnaki came into our solar system. They numbered them from the outside in. So Mars would be the number six planet, Earth would be the seventh planet, and Venus would be the eighth planet. And they would also represent them with like an eight-pointed star hieroglyph would mean Venus. A five-pointed star would be further out. You'd have a six-pointed star would be Mars. And the Maya did the same thing. They, for some reason, they also gave these numbers to the planets, and they had names. Like, it was called Six Earth Place. It was referred to as a star symbol with 6 points, just like the Sumerians. Now, you know, the Sumerian story talks about them having bases on Mars and our moon and on Earth. Now, this Naranjo story is the same thing. We had the Maya having this conflict with, you know, this is just history that was brought down probably from the Sumerians to the Maya. So that's why they have a similar story. Now, when I found out about the story, Debbie, it just blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, I've never heard of such. And nobody really knows about this. It's very a really unique story. And you have to do a lot of research looking for this story because there's not a lot of archaeologists that even write about it. Sometimes it's mentioned in passing. They'll be talking about some of the conflicts that Tikal had, and then they'll mention Naranjo. So you really have to do some really deep digging.
And going back to the Olmecs, why did the Olmecs carve these massive stone heads out of basalt, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Well, that again, archaeologists, they because we don't they don't have anything written down why they did them. They just speculate. But what they look like to me is they're severed heads. The Maya ball game, the victors, their heads would be cut off. The Maya hieroglyphics, if you look at their text, they have a lot of what they call head glyphs. They're just little different heads of different gods and different personas that they have. It's just the head, no neck, just cut off. And I think these are three-dimensional representations of some of these glyphs that the Maya produced. It's all about cutting heads off. I mean, it doesn't sound pretty, but that's what it is. And these heads would be situated at certain places in this little town that they found most of these in Veracruz, somewhere around there. And they were all buried because it appears that whoever took over the cultures down there after the Olmec tried to destroy a lot of the Olmec stuff was destroyed. They buried it. You know, if you wanted to get rid of evil, you bury it. And so a lot of Olmec stuff was buried intentionally.
So interesting. So, do you think that these heads were just those people who were chosen as an homage to the gods, or that these heads were actually representative of more royalty that may have been beheaded?
I think so because they're all very personal. They're not all the same head. They all have very human features, you know, like they're actually features that represent a certain person and not just a generic, you know, face.
Got it. So your book suggests that an ancient Martian civilization endured a planet-wide catastrophe, which makes sense, especially based on what's there now, the fact that the planet is rusting, and that's why it is red or orange, and also some of these abandoned structures. So based on your findings, George, what kind of event do you think led to their demise?
Well, this is just speculation, but following the Zachariah Sitchin's interpretations of these Sumerian texts, also with what we have with the Naranjo, the Star War of the Mesoamerican cultures, Maya, it appears that sometime in the distant past, when Earth was only occupied by probably Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon species, some runaway culture came into our solar system. Either the Anunnaki or someone similar to that, because we only have the Sumerian story. We don't really know who these people are because it's history. You know, humans are writing this story, so we don't know what they've embellished or what they've done. But it appears that some runaway culture came into our solar system, and they found Earth, this beautiful paradise, and they set up camp. And they used the available man that they found, following the Zachariah Sitchin idea, and made us to be workers to build their new civilization. Now, as a safeguard to protect them from this rogue culture that they left, or this enemy, they set up a base, a guardian base on Mars, and they also set one up on the moon. And then the Sumerians talk about the Anunnaki having bases on the moon and Mars. So, but these bases were set up to protect them for if this advanced culture would come into our solar system looking for them, they'd have, you know, like George Bush said during the Gulf War, better to fight them over there than over here. That kind of idea, which makes sense. So you set up this perimeter. If this culture comes in, you fight them on Mars. That's why we have all this destruction and all of these machinery pieces that they seem to be finding with the rover driving around, taking these pictures. And so they had fought battles on Mars and also on our moon. And I guess once this culture that was here that started civilization on our planet, once they were found, they left. And they left us to fend for ourselves. And over time, as time passed, we evolved, we made cities, and we had basically forgotten about how we were created here on this planet. And now we're moving out to a spacefaring culture. We're going to the moon, and we don't go to the moon anymore because there's too much stuff up there. That's why we don't go to the moon anymore. And we're going to Mars. And what we're finding now, going to the moon and going to Mars, we're finding ruins, and we're finding that we were already there. That's basically the short version of what we're looking at.
It's interesting. And I just want to pass this other possibility point of view by you. Pardon me. It said that over 1 million years ago, that the Greys, meaning the species, the Greys, have a really large agenda with Mars. 1 million years ago, their ancestors were successful with experiments on Mars, and that the Greys are the ones who left the monuments on Mars. The same monuments as you were saying that the NASA Viking started photographing in 1976, like the face on the Mars or the five-sided pyramid, several four-sided pyramids, and other very distinct objects. What are your thoughts about the possibility of the Greys as a species and their connection with Mars?
Well, it's interesting that you have that million year mark, because the Maya Star War, this is written in Maya text. They talk about the first war happened a million years ago. And that's the number. It's actually, I think it's 896,000 years ago. So it's almost a million. So that's the number they come up with, which is pretty interesting. And that's when all this happened. And now I'm not saying I want your audience to, you know, stop blinking their eyes and thinking George is crazy. I'm not suggesting that the Maya actually had battles with this culture on Mars. This is the stories that were passed down to them. They do reenactments. Like when a new Maya lord takes over a city, they have all these rituals that they do. Sometimes they'll dress in costumes and they'll become gods of the past, and they'll actually do these reenactments. And I think a lot of times they're doing reenactments of these ancient battles that happen on Mars that they're familiar with, that they've been told about. It's just like we have reenactments of the Civil War down in the South. I lived in New Jersey, and some friends of mine were very into Civil War reenactments. There's all these battlegrounds. They'd go there, and there's hundreds of guys do this. And they dress. They got to have the right outfit, and there's seamstresses that will actually, you know, commission to do these outfits for them. And so that's a big thing, reenactment. And I think that's a lot what the Maya did. And there's evidence of that. The Aztec also did reenactments. They would actually do reenactments of sacred wars in the past, but they wouldn't kill the enemy. They would set up these negotiations with surrounding towns or cities, and they'd have these fake battles. This is documented. And they wouldn't kill the enemy. They'd capture them, and then they would be sacrificed later to the sun gods and all this kind of stuff. But this whole idea of reenacting, if you go to D.C., Washington, D.C., I'm in Virginia now, so I'm not far from D.C., we have all of the memorials to ancient wars, you know, American wars, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, all these monuments. So there's all this history of all these battles right there in D.C. And so I think it's not a stretch to say that the Maya were probably told about these stories by the Anunnaki, Ningasada, when he came down to South America, because they were all looking for gold, supposedly, and you know, to save their planet, which was
their planet's atmosphere. Yes, absolutely, and also Africa was huge for the gold mining.
Right now, which Sitchin talks about, they wanted to get these particulates from the gold to put into the atmosphere to protect their planet. We're doing the same thing with the contrails, with the jets that go over there. There's all this talk about what are they doing, and, you know, they're releasing some kind of particulates It's the same idea that the Sumerians had. This, thousands of years ago, but they were supposedly using gold particles.
Wow, amazing. Do you think that there's any evidence that the survivors may have fled from Mars to another planet in the solar system, or maybe even to Earth?
Yeah, well, that's part of my scenario with the runaway culture that came here that set up these guardian outposts on Mars and on the moon. When they were found out by whoever, either an aggressive culture or their home world culture actually found them. And once they battled here, once they were found, they moved on. So I think they had moved on to another area. They may visit back and forth here. That may be some of the histories about people spotting UFOs and things like that, being abducted. It may be the similar culture, but they're not living here anymore. They're gone because they had to leave because they, when you're hiding and they find out where you're at, that's the gig is up.
Gig is up, yeah. So then I guess the next thing I was thinking maybe as a moot point was, are we the original Martians?
I think we're the original people that whoever came here made us.
Right.
Because that's why we
Maybe
have the
we won't say their name, but it's spelled Anunnaki.
right. Yeah, some similar type of culture like that. Because they made like four different species here of humans. They had the Negroid, the Caucasian, the Redskin. They did. We were all made to do different things. We white people supposedly we don't have any melanin. We worked in the caves. We were in the mining areas. That's why we don't have any color. The Africans were out in the field. They had to have the protective, because we don't have any fur. When they developed us, I don't know why they got rid of all the fur we probably had. I'm sure Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon are just full of, they're very hairy probably because they don't have clothes. Nobody's making clothes. You got to have, and you stick us out in the weather. I mean, we got to get some clothes, man. So, that was one of their flaws, and I think one of the main problems with why another reason that the our creators left is because they couldn't handle us. We're a very obnoxious culture. We're constantly having wars. We're very aggressive, and unlike like S Star Trek, where you have Spock, they were very stoic. They had developed. They became very cold people, very unemotional. I think the Anunnaki were similar to that, and we were just uncontrollable because they had used the Neanderthal and the Cro-Magnon, very aggressive species that they used to genetically make us. And that's a lot of our DNA. And that's why we're so aggressive. They just can't handle us.
Amazing. Do you think that with all of this, that so many people firmly believe is fact, that there's an incredible history none of us have been taught, that mainstream science, in fact, I'll go as far as saying mainstream media dismisses these anomalies on Mars, that there's an intentional effort to suppress the idea and the deep information and proof of ancient life on Mars?
Well, yes. I like to, if your listeners out there want to take a look at the book, it starts off with Carl Sagan's pyramids in Elysium, and they're all three-sided pyramids that he found there. But the most interesting thing is that I call them the double-barreled smoking gun. I challenge anyone to look at the Keyhole Formation or the Parrot Geoglyph. Now, the Keyhole Formation is a totally symmetrical, amazing structure on Mars. It's over a mile long. It has a wedge at the top and the circular formation at the bottom. It's totally symmetrical, totally geometric. We've written a science paper. I had two geologists work on it with me. There's no way this was made naturally. And also, looking at the Parrot formation, now this is a parrot that's a profile, it's a big sculpture of a full-bodied parrot laying on the surface of Mars, and it has 22 points of anatomical correctness. Now, if you look at something like you look at a cloud or a rock that kind of looks like a bird or a mountainside, maybe looks like a bird head or what, they're usually silhouetted. There's no secondary, tertiary detail. There's no irises and eyes and nose and nostril, whatever you're looking at.
And feathers.
Right, this has feathers and everything. The feather frets. I mean, it's remarkable detail, highly detailed. We've had five veterinarians look at this. It's two science papers we had published on this. So we have all this evidence out there, this especially these two structures, which have been published in science journals. They've been on Ancient Aliens. They've been on The Proof is Out There. And still, it doesn't get a lot of attention from, like you're saying, the mainstream media or mainstream scientists. And I've challenged any of them. Prove me wrong. Tell me how this parrot was formed with 22 points of anatomical correctness. Now, these veterinarians, they had nothing. They know nothing about Mars or anything. They were just amazed that this parrot looked so real. It's beautiful sculpture. Now, bringing this all around again, Debbie, the parrot is right out of Mesoamerican mythology. The parrot is the principal bird deity of the creation story. Now, if your listeners don't know about Maya mythology, it starts with the hero twins. A lot of European cultures, African cultures, Mesoamerica, always talk about the twins. Well, the hero twins, they had to go after this principal bird deity, the parrot. He's also called Seven McCall, because he also was a representation of the Big Dipper, the seven stars of the Big Dipper. So he was called Seven McCall and the principal bird deity. Now what he did, he stole the sun after the world was created and everything. So the hero twins had to go looking for him. So he was a mischievous kind of guy. He had stolen the sun, he hid it, and he was perched at the center of the world on the world tree at the top. So the hero twin, they had blow darts, and he shot the blow dart, hit the parrot right in the beak, and killed him, and he falls down to earth. Now, the parrot formation, if you look at it in the book, he looks like he's been shot down, and he's on the ground. He's got his wing up, his one paws up, his foot with like in agony. So he looks like, as the Monty Python would say, you know, it's a dead parrot. And when we first started working on that, we used to get a lot of people making fun of it about the Monty Python skit. But it is a depiction of a dead parrot, and it has a blow dart in its beak. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, that is amazing.
So this is, and a lot of things, even back to the face on Mars, is right out of Mesoamerican iconography. It's the same idea, this human feline, and we have the parrot. The Maya also represented, they used keyhole symbols and things in some of their hieroglyphics and art. So all of this, everything in the book, we can trace back to the Mesoamerican culture. And again, not that the Maya were building these on the Mars, on the surface of Mars, but somebody told them about this, and this was part of their indoctrination, part of their history.
Yeah, amazing. And do you think that this face on Mars that you call a feline human face was a Lyran being, a lion human being?
No, I think it's just all symbolic. The whole thing about human and feline, if you look at Sumerian murals, you'll sometimes see these little chariot guys shooting arrows, killing lions, or there'll be a king killing a lion. It's man's dominance over nature. The lion is a symbol of nature, the wild nature of you know, the animals of the world. So having the kings and all these murals of them killing, you know, they have dominance over nature. That's what that's showing. So the whole thing about the human feline, again, is showing the dominance of man over feline.
I see.
And then they'll have a man with a human face with a dog, or then there's the life death mask, which are very popular. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the duality,
which we have a lot of on this planet for sure.
Yes, right.
It's interesting. You brought up this upcoming mission, this NASA mission, which is called Artemis, and hopefully it will launch in 2026, 2027. And for folks who don't know, this is a series of missions going to the moon to establish a long-term human presence on the lunar surface. And it's going to include some pretty cool things like the first woman, like first person of color. It's kind of amazing in 2025 to talk about this. And also a first international astronaut on the moon. So, George, with missions like Artemis program and potential human colonization of Mars, what discoveries do you think are going to force the scientific community to acknowledge the possibility of an ancient Martian civilization?
Well, Artemis is actually, that's the sister, the twin sister of Apollo. So it's kind of logical. That's how they use that. She used to have the bow and arrow. And
Diana.
So, right. So that's basically the symbolism there. And the whole idea of showcasing Artemis was that they would have, you know, had Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon. So the idea is that we're going to have a woman come down and be the first woman to. So the only problem I have with that is that over the last 5 years, NASA has been pigeonholed into that's what we have to do, because it's all politics. It's political. They thought that this would be a more pleasing trip for the public to see that, oh, we all can't wait for the first woman, as opposed to going there for science. Mm-hmm. So this has all become political. And actually, we were supposed to be on the moon last year. That was the projected time that we were supposed to land on the moon. But it's been kicked back further and further and further, and they're finding all kinds of problems. So I don't know if we're going to go to the moon, but according to Musk, we're going to go to Mars. And they're going to bypass the moon. The problem with the moon is that there's too much stuff.
Yeah, talk about that. You mentioned that earlier, and I'm curious what you mean by that.
Well, when we first went to the moon, we have photographs of the moon on the surface, some landscapes that the astronauts, and there's ruins in the distance. There's all kind, there's geometric columns that are sticking out of the surface. There's all kinds of ruins all over the place. And that's one reason why, see, again, going back to when I was in high school in 1976, my science teacher, they talk about, you know, in 5 years, we'll be going to the moon. They're going to have hotels. You know, this was the projected idea because, you know, we had just gone to the moon. Everything was wonderful. And it just never happened because when they got there, there was too much stuff all around. And this is what the Russians saw. The Russians were way ahead of us in the early 60s. They had the first woman orbit the moon. They had low altitude passes, and they took photographs of the surface. And not to get crazy again, but this is what caused the problems with Kennedy, because there's records that the Russians communicated with the president saying that we don't think you should be going to the moon. See, they're communist. Communists, they have all the power. They take religion away, no spiritualism. I mean, you would probably not have a job over there. You wouldn't be able to do what you're doing.
I would not have a podcast.
Right. You wouldn't have a podcast because the government is the power. And you can't have humans finding out there's something else beyond us, the government. So the Russians did not want to pursue the space program. They first photographed some of the ruins up there, and they tried to persuade Kennedy not to go. Now, do you know where Kennedy was the day before he got assassinated?
No, if he wasn't in Texas.
They never talk about that. Well, he got assassinated in Texas.
Right.
Well, you know where Houston is?
Yeah.
Ah. You know, Houston, we have a problem.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it all makes sense now. He was giving a speech at Houston about the space program. And at the meeting, he said, this is an old, because his family was Irish. And he said, our hat is already over the fence. That's an old Irish saying. When you're a kid, all the kids wore hats, and you're climbing over a fence to go, you know, take something from your neighbor's yard, you throw the hat over, so when you climb over the fence, you don't lose your hat. You follow me? So he said, our hat is already over the fence. It means we're committed. So we're going to the moon. You know, the Russians aren't going to stop him. And of course, you know, he was killed, and the space program was slowed down, but we still made it to the moon. We kept going. And, you know, that's probably what happened to Marilyn Monroe, you know, all those martinis, loose lips, sink ships. So she was taken care of. So this is a long history of all this we have about us not going to the moon.
Do you believe, because this has been termed a conspiracy theory, that we never really went to the moon, that all the footage we saw was staged, that Stanley Kubrick, the famous director, actually was involved, and that's why he was given full steam, full financial rights to do his movie, because he actually directed this landing on the moon to satisfy the American public and the politics and so forth, and also, like you were saying, to come to sensibly before the Russians. But is there truth to that? What are your feelings about that story, or truth, myth or not?
Well, there's no denying, really, we made it to the moon. But there may be some truth to the fact that they might have used Stanley to stage a few pictures that we could show the public, because, you know, the astronauts were standing amongst ruins, and we can't have that. So I think we went there, we saw a lot of stuff on the surface, and some of the pictures are real. Others might have been staged by Stanley or someone else. But I think they did stage some, because there's, you can find pictures where you can see wires behind rocks and stuff. It looks suspicious. But I think it's a fact we went there, because you can, I mean, through satellites going around the moon, you can actually see the landers and stuff. So we were there. And but they couldn't keep the charade up forever, because I think one of the last missions, I think it was 17 or whatever it was, they actually set a camera in front of a rock, and you know, you're watching a rock for a half an hour because the two astronauts are walking around behind it doing research. And, you know, we don't see anything. So, you know, it's just a lot of weird stuff happened on the moon. There's the famous Richard Hoagland discovery of that crater that they drove by that has the robotic head that appears to be sitting there with part of a shoulder and stuff. It's like, you know, again, having robotic wars at one time on this planet. Again, the outpost possibly, you know, protecting Earth. And we're finding all this stuff now, and our governments don't know what to do with it. Russia doesn't want to pursue any of this. China is going to the moon. They've already landed on the dark side, but they're going there for mining. They want to get, you know, of course, for all these electric batteries and stuff, we need all of these, you know, really unique type of minerals and things. And that's why they're going to the moon. And I don't know what the conflict, China thinks that wherever they land, they own it, which was never what the NASA program wanted. Everything on the moon was supposed to be owned by everyone on Earth. But China believes that if they go there, they own it. And so that's a conflict going on. That's another reason why Elon wants to get to Mars first, because, you know, all we need is for China to get to Mars and set up some missile bases, and we're never going to get there.
Yeah.
Which this is hard. Very low gravity. All these structures we're finding are gigantic. The face on Mars is a mile and a half long. This keyhole formation is a mile long. The Parrots, everything seems to be around a mile. Everything is huge because there's less gravity. You can build big stuff. And like the keyhole probably is a what they call arcologies. It's probably a structure that they lived in. You know, they weren't building houses on the surface. They built these huge structures to live in. There's probably libraries in there and all kinds of condominiums. Who knows what's in there? All kinds of information. And, you know, it's a mad rush for information. You know, the data runs everything.
Yep. Absolutely. I want to go back to Mars now. You're talking about this. And so specifically, there's the Elysium Pyramid and these city complexes in Nepenthes, Mense, and also Atlantis Chaos. They're very intriguing, right? So what is the significance, do you think, of their geometric patterns? And let's just start there, the significance of the geometric patterns.
Well, starting with Elysium, with Carl Sagan, those pictures were taken by the Mariner 9 back in the mid-70s. And that's what Carl Sagan, he had on his TV show, Cosmos, and also he had images in his book. Those images were actually first noticed by another scientist. His name was Mark Gibson. And he had a science paper published in the Icarus Journal, which is a highbrow a science journal. It's not just your regular. Now you can get things published on all kinds of online journals, which probably aren't worth the salt that they're made of, as they say. But he was published there, and he had a paper called Pyramidal Structures on Mars. This was in 1974. So the scientific community with Carl Sagan, they were looking at this seriously. Everything was very serious until the face on Mars, and then it all just fell apart because they don't mind looking at geometry. Geometry, as Carl Sagan said, is intelligent life on Earth reveals itself through the geometry and regularity of its construction. So scientists, if they see geometry, they know that that is not made by wind and weather. It's like the keyhole. The keyhole cannot be made naturally. It's somebody, a intelligent hand had something to do with that. And so all of these structures we're finding on Mars are very geometric, especially in Elysium with these three-sided pyramids. Now on Earth, we have, like in Egypt, Mesoamerica, the Maya, they have four-sided pyramids. A lot of these pyramids we're finding on Mars are three-sided, which is tetrahedral. That's the old tetrahedral geometry, the sacred geometry. So, and of course, a pyramid, very stable, it's not going to fall over. And we find other five-sided pyramids on Mars, a lot of pyramidal formations. And also elongated rectangles, very straight. The book is full of them. And it's amazing that there's so many. It's overwhelming, really. And you also talked about the place in the Atlantis Chaos, which is a whole grid city. It's a big area that has broken walls and all of these little compartmentalized structures that are very similar in size. They're all about 25 by 25 feet in diameter. It's just a cubic grid. It's a whole grid city. It's amazing. And that you can see the roofs, and it's all illustrated in the book. And a lot of the chapters, I do side-by-side comparisons of terrestrial structures on Earth here that look remarkably just like what we're looking at on Mars. If you didn't know any better, I could say the one on Mars is on Earth and the other one is on Mars. You know, switch them around, people wouldn't, they'd say, well, that's amazing.
What do you think? Do you think that they were originally built on Mars? And then when this became, I mean, how did all of that work? Or why did they replicate here? What is the significance? It almost makes me also wonder if there's any way they can communicate the similar structures on the different planets.
Yeah, doesn't it make you think like somebody went there and saw these and then came back here and did the same type of idea? I think it's more with architectural planning and how it's a commonality that when you start building things, these are the what you come up with. And this idea was also probably passed down, you know, from whoever we talked in the beginning, this runaway culture that came here that, you know, had a lot to do with who we are. This was all in our DNA. It's in our, you know, this is how we build things. It's like if you have Home Depot by your where you live, if you go to Home Depot, you know, they have 4x8s, 8x10. You know, everything is a similar size. You have 2x4s. And if you're using all that similar material, your houses are going to dictate that size. And when architects come in and do a development, usually they're cookie cutter, they call them, because they all look alike. And I think we're finding cookie cutter archaeology here.
Cookie cutter archaeology. That is very interesting.
I just made that up.
Yeah, but I like it.
I like it.
It speaks to this, you know,
it
because
does, yeah.
There's just no doubt when you look at this, there's something going on. There's history here. This is real. There are photos and structures to prove it. And it's not a conspiracy. It's real. And then it begs one to start asking the questions, well, why did they do this? And what is the connection? And it's fascinating. And I hope at some point, if Elon does make it there successfully and can stay, and the scientists can do research, that they can edify some of this. They can find out the information, maybe go in these structures and find what was left behind, and that they will share it with us. You know, they won't keep that to themselves, because this is going to be mind-blowing and change the history as we know it of the cosmos, of the galaxy.
Right. And hopefully it'll give us a better understanding of who we are.
Absolutely. Getting back to who we are, so I want to talk a little more about the Mesoamerican cultures. They used a lot of intricate symbols in their artwork, which must intrigue you as an artist. Have you discovered that there's any reoccurring motifs or patterns in the artwork, and it shows, oh, there's some kind of a symbolic language among these civilizations?
Yeah, well, that's interesting that you mentioned about the Maya hieroglyphs. And they're all like slightly abstractions of everyday items they use for pictographs and things like that. And archaeologists had a very difficult time to decipher the Maya hieroglyphs. And it's remarkable that there's three prominent archaeologists that deciphered and broke the code for this Maya hieroglyphics. And they were all artists. So it's the artistic mind. You know, artists, we think on the, you know, there's the left side and the right side brain. So, you know, one side's analytical, like my friend Dr. Brandenburg talks about. He says that your geologists, when they look at the rocks on Mars, they're looking at what it's made out of. Is it basalt? Is it sedimentary rock? Is there any kind of materials in there that are gemstones or whatever? And he said they would go over and knock the lizard off so they could get a better look at the rock. So, and it's kind of true. They're kind of bizarre. And I don't know if you know who Dr. Brandenburg is. He's a plasma physicist. He's also a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research. And he's the one that revealed NASA's knowledge that Mars had nuclear explosions at one time. They discovered this with the Viking missions, because the Viking orbiters had these little atmospheric sniffers on them. They could take readings of the atmosphere. They found xenon 129. Now, that is a signature for nuclear explosions. Those started to elevate on our planet when they started doing all the bomb testing in the 40s. And he noticed this in the, this was in NASA's own data, that they had evidence from 1970s that Mars had some type of nuclear explosion in the Cydonia and Utopia area of the planet. And this data has been repeated in newer missions with the Mars Global Surveyor, things like that, that also could do the atmospheric testing and make records of that. So they are well aware that some type of catastrophe happened on this planet millions of years ago, possibly a million years ago, and recorded in the Maya stories and also Zachariah Sitchin's interpretations of reading these ancient texts. So the government knows a lot more than they're telling us. Back to Kennedy, we're supposed to have all of this documents released here with the new administration coming in. They're still stonewalling that. Originally, I think a couple weeks ago, they only released the redacted the material. They're fighting tooth and nail to get this information out, and they're fighting this equally to keep it hidden from us. So God knows what's in these documents, which should be released soon.
One can hope. One can
Yeah,
hope.
right.
It
And
is.
I think the release of that documents, those documents will open up everything, because the reason he was killed, I think, is because what we're finding on the moon and Mars.
Okay, well, that's huge. That's an amazing
Oh
claim.
yeah. So you could see why they'd want to keep that under wraps.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it opens so many things. That's not just one can of worms. It's quite a few. And it's not just connected to this country or this planet. It's connected to the cosmos and to the galaxy and to other planets and other species. And then, of
Oh,
course,
yeah.
many other species actually exist besides people on Earth.
Right. It's probably all involved in that. That's why this is such a hot topic.
Hot topic, yeah. There are also people, there are researchers say that there is this possible connection between the pre-Columbian art and then the extraterrestrial or otherworldly influences. Have you come across any evidence, George, in the iconography that supports or refutes this theory?
That's a hard question. The Maya appear to depict serpentine type people. Also the Sumerians do. You can find some of these little statuettes of these very serpentine looking transformational beings that look like they have snake heads. And you find the same thing in the Maya. So that may be, the reptilian culture that you hear about. That people talk about when they get abducted or whatever, they hear mentioning of the reptilian. So there's evidence in their pictographs and then their hieroglyphics of this reptilian culture. And you find that in Peruvian, also in the Sumerian, back to the crescent in the Middle East there.
Yeah. There are a lot of ancient structures that align with celestial bodies. I mean, we know this on this planet absolutely to be true. Is there also evidence in their art, in the pre-Columbian art, Olmec, Maya, Aztec, etc., that shows that they have this very deep understanding of astronomy and of the cosmic cycles?
Oh yeah, and the alignments of their structures with the stars and the rising and setting of the sun. Are you familiar with Dr. Mark Carlotto?
No.
Dr. Carlotto is also a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research. He has a book and also I think he's got a web page. It's called Before Atlantis, and what he has been studying is the pole shift. And most cultures, when they build a structure, it's aligned north. And we find a lot of these 2,000, 1,000-year-old structures, Roman, others that are built on top of other structures, aren't aligned directly north. They're kind of off by 10, sometimes 20 degrees. And he thinks this has to do with the pole shift, that these structures were probably built 20 to 30,000 years ago, because then they aligned with the north, because north has shifted. And his stuff is pretty amazing. And that is an interesting, excuse me, interesting idea. And he does this all, through math. It's not projecting anything. It's just showing you how this is how it was aligned, 20,000 years ago. This structure would be aligned. And he does with Teotihuacan in Mexico, how that's still off the alignment. And when that gets aligned, the number there will knock your socks off. But and of course, the Maya said that Teotihuacan was there before they came into the area. So we really don't know how old that is. And it's not very Aztec looking with the structures. Don't have a lot of hieroglyphics on them like most of their buildings do.
This
Yeah,
may be, yes, please.
it's like this absence of the glyphs and everything. So what we find over in Egypt, where you have the Sphinx and the pyramids, there's no glyphs on them. Like all of the structures the Maya or the Egyptians built all had all of this highly decorative hieroglyphics all over the stuff. And when you see the Sphinx and some of the surrounding structures there, there's nothing on them.
This may be out of your wheelhouse because everything you're saying is begging me to ask this. But I also do a lot of deep diving into Nikola Tesla. I find that being to have been like so compelling that all I want to do is research him right now. Suffice it to say that one of the things he came up with was if you understood the numbers 369, you would have the keys to all the universe. That is a quote from him. And I just want to better understand because I understand those 369 also have to do with pyramids and also have to do with these amazing structures, including the anomalous structures and a lot of the structures here on Earth. So, do you have any data or information on that?
Well, I do mention Tesla in the book, his connection to electricity, which the Maya rain god was connected with the Thor's hammer. It's all about electricity, and yeah, he was an amazing individual. We had the whole conflict with him and Thomas Edison. I mean, Thomas Edison. When I was a child, I loved Thomas Edison. I thought he was the greatest. And then I realized that he stole everything he ever had patented. He took everybody's work and he hated Tesla. He tried to destroy Tesla and he did. Tesla died he was basically living in a little apartment and he had no money. It's amazing. But he was going to give us free energy, all this stuff. And you can't have that in a culture like we have. Who's going to make money? Who's going to pay the bills? And he was just a genius. And he also, I don't know if you've found the information about him having contact with getting radio waves from Mars.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, so he's got a total connection from the beginning with Mars. And he's a pretty amazing guy. Want
Yes.
to put him on your program.
Oh, does anybody channel Nikola Tesla? I would love that, like really. But maybe I'll even do my own show on him because he also, just as an aside, from my fascination as a shaman, and I want to preface that by saying shamanic practitioner, that he also has a lot of similarities to shamans in that he would go into a deep trance out of
Oh,
nowhere.
yeah.
And while he was in the trance, as you know, he would see all these items, meaning an invention that hadn't been created yet, to the minute detail and dimension. He was in it like a matrix and could see exactly how it needed to be built. When he came out of this deep trance, he went into an untold sickness. None of the doctors could understand. He couldn't bear lights, sounds, anything. He was on death's door, and the doctor said, "We don't even know how to heal this man. We don't see anything wrong." And then suddenly he was well, and he came back with wild abilities and talents. And
Oh,
that
yeah.
is exactly the initiatory stages of one becoming a shaman, the near death, the rebirth, and the wild talents. And so between that and the extraterrestrial connections he's had, As you may know, he and Marconi both came out in the late 1800s and the 1920s, and I just shake my head. I shudder to think what that was like for these men to say, we're in contact with extraterrestrials, and they were ridiculed. And that was a great basis for Edison and these other people to say he's a madman, right?
Right.
He wasn't. He wasn't. So
Yeah.
yes, I'm passionate about him, but thank you. Thank you for talking a little bit about that because it's interesting stuff. So moving us forward then, is there anything new that's coming out? I mean, this is an amazing book, right? It's and I read God, somebody wrote you a beautiful review about this, something about like this is the tome you must have. And
Right.
I agree. You know, it's there's so much incredible information in your book. Is there anything, any new discoveries about these civilizations or lost technologies that are just recently coming to light since your book?
Well, since the book came out about a month later, somebody put on X a square structure that everybody was talking about, and it was highlighted on Joe Rogan's program. Did you hear about the Square Foundation that they were all talking about? It was everywhere on the internet. And actually, Elon Musk commented on it and said, that's the structure we need to look at when we go to Mars and see how it got there. So this is an oddity in my view, because myself and all the people that I know that we do this research, we've known about this since the year 2001. This is a very old NASA picture. There's better images of foundations than this one. And this one seemed to be right out there, got all this attention. And I find that to be strange that they would pick this to get this topic going. And it's still being talked about. And it's just a basic partial square, completely square formation. It's a foundation, walls, and parts of it are missing because it's covered with sand and dirt. And NASA's taken like 8 to 10 pictures of this. So there's a lot of documentation. That's another thing that listeners out there, my book, I have listings of multiple images of these formations. I'm not just using one image. NASA's taken multiple images of most of these structures that I'm talking about. Like the keyhole, there's probably 8 pictures of that, especially there's the Mars Reconnaissance High Resolution image. So, yeah, NASA takes a lot of pictures of these formations, but I just find it odd. This is one of the newest things to come out about this square formation. If you look it up, Debbie, just look for a square structure on Mars with what's Joe Rogan, and he's got the biggest podcast in the world. I mean, so that's a lot of viewers. So that was kind of
Yeah.
shocking.
He's opening up. I like where he's headed. He used to be very closed about a lot of these things. And I don't know if it was Graham Hancock that got him warmed up, but I definitely see in many people in our tribe who subscribe to all of this, who believe all of this to be true, are so excited to see where Joe Rogan's going. Because when you have an influencer at that level starting to talk about these things, about extraterrestrial, about other planets, about the things you're bringing up, this is important. This is a movement of people
It
waking
is.
up.
And, he actually had, I think a couple weeks ago, he had Elon Musk on his program, I think talking about Doge or something like that. But in the first 5 minutes, they do mention the Square Foundation. And they talk about that. And of course, Elon jokes and goes, oh, it's extraterrestrials, which is kind of funny. But it's great that people are looking at this stuff. And if they are impressed by that square foundation, they haven't seen anything yet. I mean, take a look at my book.
Yeah, take a look at the book. And George, where can people find you?
I'm on the internet. We have a website called the Sidonia Institute. If you just type in George Haas, I'm all over the internet. I've been on Ancient Aliens and Coast to Coast with George. And they can contact me on Facebook. Just type in George J. Haas. Open. I'll talk to anybody. I love getting the information out. I don't make a lot of money on this stuff, but my whole goal is to get the information out there. And if you want to support this kind of research, please, buy 3 or 4 copies of my book. The Kindle is great because you can zoom in on the parrot and all the formations because it has high resolution images in the Kindle. And the Kindle's great. I mean, they sent me the copy of that. It was like, oh my God, this is so good. It's totally surpasses the book because you're just looking at, you know, black and white photographs. The Kindle has the light and it's like looking at NASA photographs. Everything in there you can enlarge. It's just great.
Beautiful. Well, George J. Haas, this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? Future goals and dreams.
Well, my dreams are to someday go to Mars. And the thing about going to Mars is, you know, you're not going to come back. It's like the old days when they left England, came to the New World. They weren't going to go back. That's, you know, when Elon goes there with his colony, they're going to stay there. And, you know, this is where they're going to build their new outpost. You know, the new America will be on Mars.
New America. Well, folks, you can find George Haas at thecydoniainstitute.com. That's C-Y-D-O-N-I-A institute.com. And I end today's show with this quote. Sometimes when you're in a dark place, you think you've been buried, but actually you've been planted. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment and share. In the next upcoming weeks, I'll be featuring on the program Bob Frizzell talking about the secret history of the Earth and Merkaba activation. Next after that will be Tyler Ellison, who channels the Sasani beings. And after that, Barbara Hand Clow. If you've enjoyed this show, please leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for joining us today on Dare to Dream.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.